Hello and welcome to episode number 21 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
For those of you who don't know, that was the best one of those that Robert's ever done, introducing himself on this podcast.
I'm going to be a professional by Thursday.
Stick around and we'll tell you why. But as we got here to record this, Robert, I just scratched my nose for unknown reasons on camera.
It's a scratch, not a pick. Keep going. I'm good with it. It allowed me to make my scratch and not a pick joke. It was a scratch.
No pick. No, as we are walking in today.
Yes.
It's fairly warm. It was warmer yesterday. But what did we hear on our way in?
We heard the cadence. We heard somebody practicing outside the Harding Band Building, practicing the Marching Illini cadence.
We are next to the Harding Band Building. We're inside the armory at the U of I in the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning. So we get this fake spring time we get in February.
Yep.
And it's today's chilly, but not cold.
Yes.
Snow's melting. Sun is out. Drumline says, let's get outside, boys.
I love it.
And girls.
I'm ready for it. Look. Last time I heard the cadence was, Marching Illini couldn't be there for the snow game. So it would have been, November 15th? What's today? We're 3 months since then? 3 months since the last time we heard a little, it had me thinking about Memorial Stadium, I'll tell you that much.
Yep. You know what else I've got here since it's starting to get balmy out? Look at this. This is my scorebook for Illinois baseball. Season starts Friday.
I like how you put your name on the front. I love it.
Yeah, because I don't know. Why not? I just feel like it's a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I need to create something. So, okay, flip me through it here.
Oh, it's just a simple.
Yes.
It's just a blank scorebook, but I just, I made a custom
score. Every game you keep score.
Yes.
Every single game.
Yeah, and then what's cool is you can reference previous games.
Okay, I have so many questions. Okay. At a Cubs game, do you keep score? You get a score sheet?
I have.
Yes.
Yes.
But it's not some people, when watching baseball, have to just keep score. There are reporters on press row at a basketball game that have to take their tallies and keep their own who has scored. That was a three. That's four fouls on him.
Okay, I do that at a basketball game more just to keep my brain engaged.
Yep.
So I don't keep drifting into other things.
Uh-huh.
But for baseball broadcasting, it's a must.
Yes.
And I often will get a scorecard at a baseball game for fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, this is going to be the thing that I'm just going to have in the bag at every ball game.
Is there a shelf at home with each season of those?
Yes.
Is that
absolutely
interesting?
I don't ever want to get rid of them. I don't know. I just feel like there's
that
little
is great. I love
little
it.
Mementos of a labor of love.
Yes,
so it's meaningful probably only to me. Except I will, I tweet out scorecards after games.
Sure.
And once in a while, if something really notable has happened, I've made a copy of it and giving it to somebody.
Mm-hmm. So if there's like a runner's interference kind of thing, do you know how to score? Okay. Again, St. Louis guy, so I'm going to think.
Do you
Cardinals.
Understand that there's people that are wondering when we're going to talk about the basketball game?
Yes. And we're still in the injury. We haven't lit the eye yet.
And I'm the one that not even. You're making me tell a story.
It's fine. Last question, and then we'll light the eye, and then we'll talk basketball.
And we could talk. I'm willing to talk scorebooks all day long.
Yes.
You know.
That famous play in the World Series in 2013, Cardinals, Red Sox, 2013, was it? Anyway, the game ends when Alan Craig is on third base, throw gets away and goes to the outfield. He gets tripped. Was it Jacoby Ellsbury? I can't remember. Basically raised their leg Jeremy Fear style and tripped him as he was running home. He's tagged out at home. The umpire says, safe. That's interference with the runner on third base. He's safe. Cardinals win the game.
Well, defenders would obstruct.
Okay, how would you score? How do you score? What letters do you use in the scorebook to score that
I don't think there's
moment?
A universe. I would mark that the out happened, and I would put, INT for interference or OB for obstruction, and you know, OB5 on the on the third baseman.
So you're drawing. So he went from second to home because he was trying to advance to third. It was a throw home, tagged out at home. Catcher throws to third, trying to get the guy from going from second to third. That was Craig. That goes in the outfield. So how do you draw? You just draw. You're drawing Craig filling in the box for a run as a solid box, and then noting how he got there.
Yeah. So the first guy got out, right?
Yes.
At the plate.
Throw home at the plate. He was out.
The second guy, I would fill in, and I would say, I would write OB for obstruction.
Excellent. I like
that. Oh, yeah. But there's no.
I could ask you 20 questions about this.
Oh, I love it. We can do a deep dive if you want.
Let's do it. But
not today.
Today, we should do something first, right?
Not today. Yes, we should.
We should light the eye. Let's do that, and then we'll get
started. You're going to do it too, aren't you?
I did it.
Because that's what you're in charge of. Here's what I should have done, and the reason that you have me on this podcast, is I should have said our guest coming up is Mike Small.
Yes.
That's called a tease, a reason to listen. Now, as I think about it, I got radio training.
Yes.
I really should have told you that.
Right. But everybody clicking on this has already seen that this is the Mike Small episode, so they know that.
Yes.
So there's no someone tuning the dial in their car on their commute home. So we're good, I think. Everybody knows that once we're done talking about this terrible loss to Wisconsin, everybody knows we're going to get to Mike Small.
We can't wait. He will join us here in studio, and they're getting ready for their spring season, which is just around the corner, speaking of weather.
Yes.
But
yes.
They go south. They go down to Alabama.
Yeah.
For that. They've already... I think done a thing or two down in, was it Florida where they
do their alumni match every year where he gets former players to come in and play against them.
I don't know that it's useful. The greatest coach, who's the greatest coach ever in Illinois history, regardless of sport. But if you want to do the Mount Rushmore, he's on it.
Absolutely.
Fact. Period.
Yes. That many Big Ten titles. As I said before, I believe I said this on one of the podcasts. It's him or the fencing guy, right? The fencing guy, I think, had 14 Big Ten titles, something like that, back in the 50s, 60s, whenever that was, before they had to get rid of the program. But yeah, him or the fencing guy.
The other thing, and we haven't published the episode, so I don't know if this will be obvious to you, but you ready for my title of the episode, this episode?
Yeah, hit me.
Don't wig out.
You can make me cough. I like it. I love it. I want some more of it.
For those who don't know, does it work if I have to explain the joke?
No, it worked. Everybody knows. I mean, because Wisconsin used the wig as part of their celebration, it was, can I tell you a story? This will be a super fast one. I get home, I open my laptop, and there's a big long blonde hair stuck to my laptop, or what looks like a blonde hair. So there are a lot of people getting home with blonde hairs on their...
Isn't it red hair?
It's supposed to be red, but the little individual strands look blonde. At least that did on my laptop. So I found one in my car this morning. The blonde hairs are everywhere.
Jake Davis wig giveaway last night. And he played great, but he fouled out. Yes. And I feel like there should be exemptions
in place. You get a sixth foul because it's... His
can you can you imagine it's, let's say it's, fire truck giveaway night.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then.
Fire engine. But continue.
Really?
Yes. You want me to explain that?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I not because I don't care, but.
Yes. I'll work it in. Don't worry.
But let's just say, you know, and then in the middle of the second half, your credentials revoked.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to give away a fire engine.
Uh-huh.
You can't be here at the game anymore.
Yeah, that would.
That's what happened to Jake Davis.
That would be terrible.
On his wig night giveaway.
That would be terrible. A fire engine is a pumper truck that has a tank to it. A fire truck has the ladders. Truck, ladders, tank, engine.
Okay, but they all have engines in them.
Yes. Yes, but the engine drives the pumper, and that's why they call it a fire engine. If you ask firefighters, they're like, hey, man, you just said you're bringing the truck. That means ladders. Why are you bringing this engine here right now? So engine means I got a pumper truck. Truck means I've got a ladder. You're welcome. You're welcome to all you. Thank you. You're
firefighters. Welcome,
everyone. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Thank you for when you bring your engines, your ladders, mm-hmm. your pumps.
My wife is so tired of the fire engine rolls past our house, and I'll do the standard joke of, like, you guys need me? You're good? Okay. You got it? All right, because I can go get it right now if you need me. She's so tired of that joke. But the more tired she gets, the more I enjoy the joke. What were we talking about again?
Kramer?
Something about basketball?
Don't wig out. Here's yes. the deal. Illinois was without Kylan Boswell.
Yes.
Illinois was without Andre Stojakovic.
Illinois is still without Ty Rogers. Let's note that. He would have been very, very, very useful last night.
Illinois hosted a good Wisconsin team.
That already
I wouldn't say
beat,
great,
beat
but
Michigan
good.
At Michigan. Yeah.
Upper half of the Big Ten, upper half of the middle of yes. the Big Ten. Illinois is coming off a brutally physical overtime game at Michigan State, and they've had a bunch of games stacked into a short window. They were tired. They played like 6.1 guys.
Yes.
It was disappointing from a fan perspective that they lost that game, but they're fine. They're yeah. going to be fine.
Yes.
Boswell's going to come back.
Yes.
Stojakovic, I think it was an ankle issue. He was not hobbling around out there. He just didn't play. He was questionable. I see this as they're going to be fine.
Yes.
They just need some rest. They need to get healthy. There was nothing. All the things that didn't go right in the game last night that was in Illinois' control.
Yep. Yep.
Not making free throws, not getting rebounds, turning the ball over. I chalked a lot of that up to fatigue.
Yes.
I'm guessing that if Illinois and Wisconsin played a series of games, Illinois is going to win more than they lose against Wisconsin.
Definitely.
There was no point where I felt like Wisconsin's the better team out here.
Yep.
Until the end
yep.
when Illinois just ran out of steam. Yep. So in terms of the Big Ten title race, it yep. puts you behind a little bit because you really need some help now to get Michigan. Besides, you have to beat them.
Yeah.
But they're going to be fine. So it's more of, well, that's disappointing.
Yes.
Then, something's wrong.
Yes. The biggest concern is, look, you couldn't turn to any of these other players. You did have Mihailo Petrović. Maybe there could be some criticism of, hey, back when you were beating Missouri by 40 and you were beating Northwestern by 40, he should have played 15 minutes to get him ready for to be thrown in there when you need some ball handling or something. I mean, I'm stretching to try to find anything with that. You know, the funniest stat last night is Keaton Wagler comes out of the game. He's out of the game for 36 seconds. Wisconsin goes on a 5-0 run in those 36 seconds. Brad Underwood takes a timeout just to get him back in the game, and he never came out again. He played 44 minutes and 24 seconds and sat for 36. And in those 36, Wisconsin scored twice. And I think Illinois turned it over on that possession. So it is a, yeah.
Because you don't have any other perimeter defenders.
Yep. It is a, this, if you don't have Stojakovic and you don't have Boswell and you can't trust Petrović, then you're kind of left to, sorry, Keaton, you're going to have to play every single minute. And then, yes, free throws at the end of a game without your legs are hard. You know,
I'm watching David Mirkovic free throw leave his hand and watching the trajectory, and it looks like a line drive.
Yeah.
That's not going in.
Yep.
He just wasn't getting anything under it.
Yep. Yep.
And free throws are way harder than they ever look to anybody who doesn't do them.
Yeah, I wrote about this last night. There's this, you know, there's a, you've had the debate with your friends or whatever about certain things, and there's always the guy who is all about rotations, right? And he's all about, like, well, coach put the best two players on the bench and they won on an 8-6 run. And like, why do you even need to put them on the bench? And the argument to that guy has always been, hey, look, there's a reason that basketball isn't just played by five guys playing 40 minutes. You have to have a breather. It is not a sport that every single player can just play unlimited minutes without, you know, serious regression on the back end as you tire out. There's a reason teams go to their bench in the first half to keep their starters fresh so that everybody is good to go in the ends of games. And as we saw last night, I mean, I cannot remember a game. Okay, yes, Brandon Lee played 56 seconds, I believe. I can't remember a game where six guys played 30 minutes or more. I seriously can't remember an Illinois game that had six players playing 30 minutes or more. And that's what happened last night. Everybody had to go. Ben averages, 22 minutes a game? And he played 43. So when you're reaching to that depth to say, hope you have the stamina for all this, and when the other team is going nine deep and has fresh guys, you see what we saw in the final 8 minutes of regulation, that a 12-point lead goes bye-bye.
And it was a quick turnaround from a Saturday night game in East Lansing.
Now,
to overtime.
Wisconsin had an overtime Saturday afternoon game, so there's not that much difference between the two teams. But they have depth, and they don't have anybody out to injury. And it's so weird to look at those injury reports because, yes, I'm expecting to see when they come out, okay, yes, Boswell's out. Oh, Stoyer's questionable. Oh, there's, you know, Rogers is out. Oh, Jaxtus, yeah, out for the season. And then you always look at the other team, and it's like, no one, no one, no one. Like, Wisconsin had nobody in the – I say this to, like, opposing fans all the time about injuries. Like, oh, you're just using excuses. Well, okay. Let's just do this with the game last night. Give me those three guys on the injury report for Illinois. Put them in the lineup. And now I get to take three of your guys, including two starters, out. How do you think Wisconsin's going to do? Okay, I'm going to take Nick Boyd, and I'm going to take Blackwell, and I'm going to take a bench guy. Okay, I'll take the Janicki kid. Now, play this game without them. How do you think Wisconsin does? That's what Illinois was facing. So it's hard to get all that upset about this. The way the game played out, blowing the 12-point lead, it's slipping away, missing the free throw that would have won the game. That's rough. That's rough. But big picture, really hard to win without that many guys.
Yeah, I don't know that it's worth a deep analysis beyond that when you just know kind of there's the biggest factor in that game. The headline was Illinois was out two starters and was already a bit tired. And Wisconsin has good players.
Yep.
And they played well. And also, see, Wisconsin remembers coming off a loss to Indiana where they felt injustice from the referees. Mm-hmm. And they want one. Yes. They kind of need one.
Yeah. And, they were a 10 seed on most brackets. Like, they were close to the bubble. They needed this badly.
Yeah. And it seemed like they were quite happy to get it.
Yes, they were very happy to get it. Celebrating very loudly, let's say.
Yeah, there was in front of their own bench after the game. And then also their social media, I mean, they leaned into it.
Yes.
Greg Gard, their head coach, went into their locker room with a wig on.
Yes.
A Jake Davis wig.
Mm-hmm.
Their social media also, I think, posted a picture of him with a wig on and Silent Assassin and kind of throwing it back at Illinois.
Yep.
It's all kind of what makes the sports world spin.
Yes.
I guess.
Yes.
But it just seemed like, this seemed a little more like you guys got something out of this a little more than it meant something.
Yes. They played with that edge. I mean, the thing about that edge is it's right close to going over. There were some, right in front of my seat, there were some Wisconsin assistant coaches saying things to Crush, like raising their voices toward the students. Like, it was very tense down there, but they were on that edge. I mean, Underwood mentioned it. Like, they were cheering when somebody would get a hard foul on Wagler as if there were some kind of goal to make sure he left the game bruised. So, Look, they can choose to play the game however they want, and that's the way they chose to play the game, and they won the game. I don't particularly like it. It makes so much sense to look over there and see three former Wisconsin instigators from three different eras of Wisconsin basketball as three assistants under guard. The latest one being hired this year is Brad Davison. So it's their thing, right? So that's how they play the game. That's how they play basketball. That's how they find their edge. And it beat Illinois last night.
I will say there are things that get said in arenas from crowds, student sections across the country that cross lines.
Yep.
The whole media sits in front of the Orange Crush.
Yep.
Sometimes you hear individual things that are said.
Yep.
And I'm not going to sit here and play Pollyanna. Like, let's all just cheer for our team. It'd be encouraging because I know that's not what happens. But there is a line between let's create a challenging environment and, like, no, we don't need to say those things. That's not helpful, and that's actually kind of mean. And all I just – but
– yes.
I don't think that's directives from student section leaders or anything like that. It's just, but that can get under the skin of the opposing team, and sometimes it backfires on you.
And look, I'm human, and I would be, if I was an assistant coach hearing things behind me, I would want to turn around and say something to the students.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult thing, and it like you said, it happens in every arena. We saw that famous photo of Dusty May before the Michigan-Michigan State game where he's sitting there and there's like six Michigan State Izzone guys like screaming and pointing at him behind him, and he's just got a smile on his face. So it's part of the college basketball culture, but yes, there are definitely lines, and it got really tense at the handshake line last night.
I'm going to guess that if Illinois and Wisconsin match up in the Big Ten tournament, there will be some memory of this game.
Oh, absolutely.
For both sides.
Yes, and if Illinois leads by 14 with 2 minutes to go, Illinois will win by 20.
Yeah, they didn't lead by 14 with 2 minutes to go.
No, I'm saying if...
Oh, they'll go... There will not be any mercy.
There will not be mercy shown. I'll just say it that way. Yes. Oh, their starters are in, up 15? Yes, they are. I'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, Illinois loses back-to-back games. I also think this is underscore. It's just really hard to just run through a Big Ten schedule.
Yep.
Almost everybody's going to find a place to drop a couple of games. Yep. Michigan might not this year.
Yep.
Because Michigan is elite. Yes. And Illinois is trying to be right there with them, and I think they have the pieces to be an elite team also.
Yes.
Let me rephrase that. They are showing that they are an elite team.
Yep.
But they just lost back-to-back games. It's going to happen.
Yep. Turnovers showed up in a bad way. Rebounding, offensive rebounds weren't there. That's a staple of this team. All the little things that Illinois has done to win these games at Nebraska, at Purdue, just didn't happen. How much of that is an issue that needs to be corrected? How much of that is, oh, there was no Boswell and Stojakovic? It's hard to say. But yeah, it's... It's an acceptable thing.
You don't want to, six
on KenPom. It's
you don't want to rail on the officiating?
No.
I don't think that's useful. I don't think it's productive, I should say.
I don't think so. I mean, the most fascinating officiating thing last night, and again, this comes from just sitting there courtside, is when Wagler missed the second free throw. There was a little bit of a thing between two Wisconsin players possibly having the rebound, so there was a hesitation. And then they didn't cross the midcourt line until 19 seconds on the shot clock.
They just missed it.
And Underwood is screaming. Just like DJ Carstensen was the closest ref to him, and he's just screaming 10 seconds, 10 seconds, 10 seconds. And, there's nothing to do. If they miss that, you can't review that. You can't – there's nothing else that can happen. It's just – it would have been a monumental brain freeze for I think Boyd was bringing the ball up, to have 20 seconds left in a game and you just dribble so slowly you don't cross half court in 10 seconds, which would have given Illinois the ball back with a chance to win in a tie game. But yeah, it wasn't called. You can't blame it on that. It would have been nice. It would have been a nice officials thing to have happen at home, to where we get that call and Illinois turns around and wins the game, but didn't happen.
By the way, Keaton's shot looked good.
Yeah, yeah. I had a I watched the replay
off the hand. It looked good.
Yes, it was. I mean, they basically put all five guys on him. Like, everybody knows who's shooting, right? Like, here's the crazy thing about last night. It was, essentially, in the history of Illinois basketball, the third best freshman performance ever. Ever! In the history of the program, 34.7 assists. You know, the record before this year was Georgie's 35 against Rutgers in 2021. And so now the top three on the list are, you know, 46 at Purdue from Wagler, 35 from Georgie, and then Wagler's 34 last night.
Wagler also climbed the season scoring list for freshmen. He passed up during the game. I know he passed up Deion Thomas.
Sure.
And Kewan Garris.
Of course.
And there was somebody else there, two other guys, I think, that he passed up during the game. And he's now alone in third place for most points in a season by a freshman. The record belongs to, well, do you know? Did you? Maybe it was in the notes last night, but
I don't know. Is it
400? Kofi? Nope. It's 494 points in one season by a freshman. Belongs to Kasper Siakouchonis and Corey Bradford.
How about that? So they are tied for first, and now Wagler's third?
Yes, and Wagler is going to blow it away.
Yeah, yep.
I mean, he almost, even if he has half his scoring average from here on out, he's going to have the most points in a season by a freshman.
You know, Scott, if he sticks around for 4 years, he's going to leave here as the leading scorer of all time. I can't wait for those next 3 years of college basketball from Wagler and Champaign. This is going to be
how
fun.
How about you enjoy the next 6 weeks?
Okay.
7 weeks, whatever it is.
I plan to, because it is, I mean, I've never experienced this, right? I've never in my 40 years of being an Illini fan. Let's see. My first season I really followed was 83-84. So we're at, what, 42 years of basketball? I have obsessed over Illini basketball. This is the best freshman I've ever seen. This is the best single superstar I've seen. Like, take over a game kind of a thing.
You know what it overshadows? David Mirkovic.
Yes.
He is having...
He was probably like seventh on that list.
On the scoring list?
No, on the best freshman seasons I've ever experienced in my lifetime.
I'm not sure. So sure it's not higher.
Yeah. Yeah,
we'd have to look and do some comps, but I mean, he's having a sensational season.
Yeah.
Sensational.
Yeah.
But Keaton Wagler is just even more flash on that. That's the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
I know what you're saying. And I think it's worth noting here that Illinois has lost to Alabama by 4. And there were some free throw issues in that game. Illinois has lost to Nebraska on a last second three-pointer and has lost in overtime to Michigan State and in overtime to Wisconsin. The only real loss is that UConn lost by 13, mm-hmm. Just a rough performance the day after Thanksgiving. That was a loss. As far as wins in the, like, Illinois dribbles out most wins, okay? Like, I think only the Texas Tech game was close in the final minute. Everything else was just teams fouling, Illinois hitting the free throws, ball game's over. 6-point win, 8-point win, 10-point win, 44-point win, 42-point win, you know, that type of thing. And so it's just really, I'll put it in a positive way. Those overtime games are usually like, go change one little thing here, have him miss that free throw. Oh, there was that lane violation here where he stepped in the lane. There's those little thing that can really change those games. And sometimes they're just kind of 50-50 over a season. You win some close ones, you lose some close ones. Illinois is only losing close ones right now. And I'm going to speak to a regression to the mean here of, okay, then it's about time Illinois started winning some 2-point games. It's about time Illinois started, you know, the ball falls your way and the other team steps in the lane for a lane violation, you get a second free throw and you hit it, and that's the difference in the game. I'm going to count on those things happening in March. So we're getting it all out of the way now. We're just going to get all those close losses out of the way, and they will turn into close wins in March. You heard it here first.
When we come back, we're going to talk to Mike Small, the head coach for Illinois Men's Golf. But I'm going to ask now, if you stick around to the end of the episode, we'll give you a chance to show how observant you are.
Yes, I like that. I like that.
Okay. But first, we're going to go to the segment with Mike Small in it.
Yes.
All right. And yeah, let's just leave it at that. There's your little
tease.
Easter egg for
it's a radio thing, Scott. Teases.
Yeah, a little Easter egg. But Mike Small.
Oh my gosh.
What'd you just do? You hit the green.
Oh my gosh.
You hit the green. See, it's a golf metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. Okay, we'll go back to it then.
Yeah.
Coming up.
The light the eye on
light the eye. The guy who likes greens, Mike Small.
This episode of Light the Eye is brought to you by Logic Coworking in Champaign. Logic Coworking offers a fantastic environment for you to accomplish whatever it is you need to accomplish. Maybe you're a remote worker who needs an office, or a group who needs to get together and use a conference room and brainstorm on the whiteboard, or a student who needs a place to retreat and study. Whatever your needs are, Logic Coworking offers a clean, sleek environment with friendly staff, fast internet, free printing, even a kitchen. Logic Coworking is located at the corner of St. Mary's and Neal in Champaign, and they're there for all of your work and study needs. Monthly membership with 24/7 access is available, or a day pass, and students get a discount. Check out Logic Coworking in Champaign. Our guest today on Light the Eye is the head men's golf coach for the University of Illinois. It's Mike Small. He is entering his 25th year at the helm, and he is considered one of the very best at what he does in leading a collegiate golf program. He hardly needs an introduction, but I just introduced you anyway. Good to see you, Mike. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Scott. It's always good to be here. You guys call, I respond.
Thank you. We appreciate it. We appreciate it greatly.
That's fantastic. A week away, or a little bit less, as folks are listening to this now or viewing, is the start of the spring season. And you've been around this a little bit. Does it ever vary in how you feel coming into a season?
No. You're optimistic. You're excited. You're curious. But we've had... 3 months since our last event, maybe more, 4 months since our three months since our last event. So in golf, if anybody plays the game of golf often or at this level, they know how fluctuating or inexact your game can be and how much of it depends on your emotional and mental stability and state, confidence, how things are happening in your life. So a lot happens since the last event, and people's, you know, they've been away for semester break for 5 weeks and played some events. Some didn't play as many as others. Some played more. School's going on. I'm sure we've had girlfriend breakups and get back togethers and everything in the little middle. And then we practice inside, hitting balls inside to out, and not playing a lot of golf. So I guess to say there's a lot of questions that I want to see answered. That's why we go to these early season events to see where we're at. We've been on a couple of practice trips, which have helped, to see where the games are physically. But when you get into the tournament under the gun, when scores and results matter for the rest of the year, a whole different can of worms opens up. So I get to see where they're at with all three of those factors matching up or mixing.
Yep.
And then practice and preparation goes from here. So it's next week's an event to go work on our ranking, get some wins, but it's also a way to evaluate ourselves.
I have a question to put you on the spot. When people talk about the best coaches at the University of Illinois, the best sport, your name is always in the conversation. And I would say so too. Are you comfortable with that? Is that awkward to hear those kinds of things? I'm sure I'm not the first one to say something like that to you.
No, it does. It does happen. It makes me feel good as a human being that maybe I've had some success and I've mattered to people, but it doesn't, beyond that, it doesn't really big, it's not a big deal. I'm comfortable with myself. I have been, I played at golf at the highest level and had some success, but had some failures. And so I know what it's like on both sides. And in coaching, I learned a long time ago, check my ego at the door. It's not about me. University is the biggest part, and then the kids obviously are right there with them, and I'm fine. I got some of my players mad at me a few years ago when we've been to the precipice of winning a national championship a number of times, and we've been to the nine top five finishes in over a 12-year period. And I got interviewed one time, and I said, we kept getting beat in the national semifinals, the final four, and they're like, when are you going to get it? Does it bother you? And I came out in an interview and I said, no, I'm good with it. If we never win, I'm okay. Do I want to win as much as anybody? Yes, I do. But I really...
It's not a white whale for you?
It's not. It really isn't. I know what it was like to start this thing. I know what hills we had to climb to get this thing to where it is now. And if you had told us 25 years ago that we would have had this career, I don't think anybody, even me, would have said it would have gone this way for 25 years. I think we've captured people's attention from coast to coast because of the sport and where it's at and what we've came from and built it. So that's self-gratifying in a way, just like we talked about. But to win the final one, yes, I'm as competitive as anybody. I want to win that stinking thing. We won, 13 Big Ten championships, but we want to win a national. But having guys, have the success they've had and be in it every year is important to me. But I think you can put some pressure on the kids too. I think you can make something out to be bigger than it is. And I've learned if you make something out to be bigger than it is, that's not always fair to everybody. So we're here to graduate kids. We're here to get them ready for life. I want happy and successful people to come out of here and learn lessons that where they've been here that will help them be great husbands and fathers and work, company employees. And if they can learn those lessons and be happy, then it's a win. But if we can win on top of it, heck yeah, let's do it. But maybe I'm old school in that way, but I'm good with it. I love competing. I love just seeing what's in these guys every week, and learning what they're made of is the biggest fun part of coaching. And golf, maybe it's different than football and basketball because they're so big, high-profile sports and people are tied to it more, but I'm not tied to the results as much. So when people say that, what you said earlier about us and our program and what we've done and my career, it's flattering, but it doesn't make me think something different about myself. It just is what it is.
Okay, but one more on the national championship, and I have to get my question in because Robert's going to take the next 30. this discussion's had many times. For those that don't know, the national championship works with several rounds of stroke play, and then after that, the final eight do what's called match play, which is a bit of a, I don't want to say a roll of the dice, but it's just not the same. And it's hard to win in a different way when even if you're the best at stroke play. And it's kind of made for TV, and we know why it exists, and that is it is entertaining, but it's not the way college golf happens the rest of the season. You've won stroke play before. Can there just be kind of a duel? Like, hey, you didn't win the match, but you won the stroke play, and that kind of is really winning the national championship. Can we, acknowledge that some places?
I think if you asked every college golf coach, they would agree with that. And I wish that's what they missed on 15 years ago, maybe 16 years ago when they changed the rules from stroke play. For 100 years, the national champion was stroke play, which is probably the most – accurate way to describe the best team in golf is to do stroke play and play four rounds and fight it out, and that's what it was for 100 years. But for TV to be involved, to come grow our sport, they demanded it be match play, which is head-to-head, easier to follow, better for the fans to get behind and rally behind. It's good for TV. So the NCAA succumbed to Golf Channel, so they changed the way the title is decided from stroke play to an additional three matches of match play. And it's great for the sport, but I think 98% of the college coaches agree, maybe 100, that it doesn't decide the best team.
Yep.
And we would have won it twice under the old rules. We would have finished second once and third three times. And we've been the most consistent program in stroke play over the last 15 or 16 years. Us and Texas are neck and neck right now. And that's something we're very proud of. So if you know that in the weeds and golf and the college golf, we're very happy with that. But that last cherry on top, the national championship, we've been beaten in the final match. But that's just the way it is. Yeah. And like I was telling our administrators the other day, we were talking, and it's like, you know, ask about the rules and do you want to be proactive in this and that. And I've always taken the stance that my time is valuable. I'm not an advocate. I'm not going to go there and push for the rule changes and lobby people. I like to spend my time working with my guys on the game and take care of my job. Just tell me what the rules are, and I'll try to figure it out, and I'll compete. But a lot of people want to be proactive and go back to the stroke play. But I think TV is so involved now that it's not going
to
happen.
I get it. It's an entertaining way to follow things, but it's a little bit like Illinois just went into overtime with Michigan State over the weekend. Like, okay, let's just do a free throw contest. You're still golfing.
That's what it is, yeah.
But it's not the way you usually determine winners in golf.
It's a shortened, exciting sprint for energy and what's going to happen next, but it doesn't identify the best team. A lot of it's happenstance. And just it's a shorter event, yeah.
Yeah, Scott, you're a baseball guy. I've always used the analogy of, like, you know, the baseball players or baseball playoffs, you know, the tournament for college baseball is you're 2 out of 3 everywhere, right? There's not one loss that could send you home kind of thing. It's if they got to Omaha and then said, okay, single games and that's it. You lose once, you're out. And then you would go back and look at so many national champions that maybe lost the first round in Omaha, but then came back through the bracket, made the final, won the best out of three and this and that. Match play just allows for those little things that probably aren't fair. You know, what if the World Series was just a game?
Yeah.
All right. There's one game. Hope you have your best pitcher.
That's how it is in high school.
Yeah. So it's this crazy thing that golf is now like 4 days of grueling and everything. And here's your champion. And, you know, 2 years ago I was at La Costa, won by 16 strokes, was it?
We won stroke play by 16 strokes. And then to your point, the next day we played a different format. It wasn't even an abbreviated. It's again, I'm not complaining. It is what it is. But it's not the same format that we've used for all these years and through the whole of the year. It's a whole different game.
And a different mentality. I was standing there when Ryan hit the cart path on 13 and went OB.
Yeah.
It was an inch from just hitting that bank and rolling down to the bunker, and he would have been fine on that. You know, and that was when it started to slip away there in that final match against Hiroshi and everything else. It was just so like... we're talking about 1 foot, and if you're in stroke play, it's all this stuff combining to be and then managing the score and this and that. And in match play, it was like 2 inches on a cart path, and okay, well, now everything's different. And it's even just following along. I'd walked all 4 rounds that time. Even just following along, it's just so different for the fan, for the experience, for the way it plays out, for the strategy. It's just totally different.
Yeah, for the listeners, it would be like a normal baseball game. And then you get to the final four, and you get a win for every inning you win.
Yeah.
And who wins the most innings wins when you can win, score 9 runs in it's one inning.
Banana ball.
And then I'll score them, but you lose 5 to 4 innings and you lose. It's a different format. And it's more dramatic. That's how I would say it.
So I want to get into this season a little bit. I attended a couple in the fall. This was a bit of a experimental fall, if you will. You've got 2 transfers. You're seeing where they fit with the returnees and everything else. So let's start with the fall. How did you feel at the end of the fall of how things went with working in the two new transfers, and you've got freshmen and you got returnees? How did you feel at the end of the fall?
I was happy with it. We got the transfers because we were looking for some depth.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of knew that the transfer portal would be populated because of the change in the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of planned for it. Got 2 of the better ones on paper, but you don't know what they're going to be like until they show up. You don't really know people. The recruiting process isn't as long and as in deep with transfers as it is with high school kids because you don't build a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But to go at the end of the fall and ranked 6th in the coaches' poll, and I think we're 8th in the computer poll at the end when we stopped playing. How do you argue with that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just pretty solid for a team that only loses 1 player off this year's team.
Yeah.
But again, golf is finicky. You could be putting good for 6 months and not putt good for another year. You know, in football and basketball, if a guy jumps 43 inches, he's going to jump 43 inches a year from now, barring an injury.
Yep.
Football, if he's fast, can run a 4.340, he's going to run a 4.340 next year, barring an injury. In golf, you never know.
Yep.
So I keep that. That's kind of, you're kind of seeing the theme of why I don't, I'm serious, but I also check things at the door because I know how fleeting this can be.
Sure.
And so at that time, we were very happy. But then you got 4 months away, 3 months away.
Yep.
We're in a different climate. You can't play all winter long. And now we get going again. We'll see how it starts up again. But golf games ebb and flow. It's It's a bigger. It's like a shooting slump in basketball, but probably bigger.
Yes,
like longer.
Yeah, I was just telling that to somebody recently. So I went to the Dayton tournament. Dane Huddleston was so much over the flag. He was flag hunting that entire tournament, and he couldn't make a 6-footer. Yeah. And it's such a unique sport of, like, think if someone is at the very, very, very top of their game, but then there's just this one little piece of the game mm-hmm. that just isn't clicking.
It happens all the time.
And it falls apart. He was just throwing dart after dart, but then would miss the 5-footer, miss the 6-footer. And yeah. you could tell he was frustrated and this and that.
Well,
he played the best of anyone there. But he was like the drop score one day because he couldn't make a putt. It's crazy when you get up close to it of how college golf plays out like that.
That's right. When you're new to a program like the transfers we were talking about, he's trying hard, trying to fit in. You're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Yep.
Remember when you were in kindergarten or nursery school and that thing wouldn't fit and you couldn't figure it out, so you just kept hitting it harder and harder and harder?
Yes.
That's what trying to make a putt is sometimes. Uh-huh. And we see it in shooting. We see guys that can make shots in practice all the time in basketball. They get in the game, they miss one or two, and then they just start thinking they're going to miss, and they worrying about missing, and therefore you miss. And that's golf all the time in every aspect of games. Driving it, that's iron play, that's putting. You just never know. You need so much mental maturity and stability and stamina to play golf all year long. That's why the runs we've had when we were ranked number one in the country for almost 2 years in a row, the mental strength of those teams, and they're all on tour now, making a lot of money. No yep. coincidence, but that's what makes them good. And there's so much that goes into it.
Yeah,
you strike me almost every time that I've ever talked with you is really good at understanding psychology of sports. And I don't know if there's a sport that is more mental than golf. Most everybody who's ever tried playing golf has felt the mental frustration of it, right? And you're in the unique position where you are coaching and still playing a sport that kind of everybody can go play. People of all ages and abilities can go play it. So I'm curious on the psychology standpoint of it, because there's teams here at Illinois that use a sports psychologist. There's teams across the country, nationally, professionally, use sports psychology. Do you utilize any of that, or do you feel like you're the go-to resource? Because I feel like there's times when I might just pay you to, like, just help me through some things in life.
How's this for an answer? It's mental when it's mental.
Mm-hmm. I
mean, it's not mental when it's not. It's just you can overanalyze things. You can make things to be a bigger problem than they are. And I think that's where a lot of it comes from. And sometimes good coaching is to elevate things and make them more important. And sometimes it's to devalue them and get them out and not think about it. It depends on the person you're dealing with. It depends on the situation you're in.
But do you find yourself being that guy to tell your players that most? Or do you need to bring in an outside voice?
No, I think I'm the first go at it in my way. And sometimes a lot of times my way works and the way I deal with it. Sometimes I've been around long enough to know that it doesn't work for everybody. I mean, if you went and saw 10 of the best instructors in the world, golf swing instructors, and you went with your golf swing, you would get 9 or probably 10 different things that are wrong with your swing. They'd start you somewhere different. If you went to a mental person, I think it would be the same thing. Psychologist, it would be the same thing. I mean, it's amazing how many times you go to go to a cardiologist or go to a doctor and you get a second or third opinion and they see things differently. It's amazing how you would think that things would be more streamlined. It's in sports, it's really different. So I have to be aware that my way is not always maybe the right way. And then we get them in touch with people. We have sports psychologists and help that we send them with and have our team help us with. But you got to be careful to always look at that as the problem. Because again, you might make it out to be a bigger problem than it was. And so much of sports psychology, I believe, starts and grows out of a person's self-image of themselves. So if you can work on a person's self-image of themselves and the way they feel about themselves and the way they react to certain things, that's going to affect their ability to concentrate, their ability to focus, their ability to turn negative things into positive things based on how they look at it. That's all it really is. That's what life is. It's how you look at things. You don't want to be so... I've had guys who try to be so positive that they're too positive. They don't take accountability. They're not honest with themselves. And other people who just cannot be realistic with themselves and are delusional, you know, and don't see the real reason. So it's all under the sun, but it comes out of who you are. And the people that don't that don't need psychology help, they're playing well, but they never consider it. They have self-responsibility, accountability, and they know how to be their own best friend. And sometimes the pressure, outside pressure, you know, people hear too much of what's going on around them, start believing things that are being forced on them by the people. And if you're confident and you believe in what you're doing and you have good support and you take adversity the right way, I think you get through a lot of this stuff.
Where's the outside coming from most college golfers?
Oh, man, where's it coming from? All the America's youth. I talked about it today in a meeting with our guys. It's amazing how the players now versus 5 years ago, their focus, their minds, their attention is so many different places throughout the day instead of where they are. They're worried about outcome because the outcome's everywhere. They're worried about you know, what's other people doing, because you can see other people's lives on Instagram any minute, and it's full of envy. It's full of jealousy. It's full of insecurity. And people are being drawn away from who they're with at the time and where they are at the time because of all these outside forces. In the old days, when I grew up, my life was my neighborhood. How simple is that? Now, these guys' lives are the entire world. Yep. And their entire golf, and they're seeing guys in other teams that might be playing a golf course that they're not at. I mean, we're up here in the north hitting balls in February, and they could watch ASU's team, and they're outside playing. If you're a weak-minded person and you're not happy with yourself and your first inclination is to complain and gripe, you're going to find something wrong with it. If your self-image is bad, you're going to find something wrong with it. But if you are secure who you are and confident who you are, understand that this whole thing is a process, not just a short-term gratification, which is a whole other issue with the youth of America. If you understand the plan, it doesn't bother you. So I think everybody's elsewhere. They're focused, their ability to have patience and stick with a plan. I've had more kids on my team last few years expect to have a lesson be a result or some kind of instructional change be take effect in one day, when it could take 6 weeks, 6 months. And they want it to happen in one day.
The best.
Well, I'm glad I don't have any of these problems that these youth have.
We don't have them. But I mean, we're mature enough to handle it. We've been through it. We've evolved. You know, but it's just. And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it's just different.
Yeah.
These kids are going to have to figure it out. I mean, to sit there and feel sorry for them, and have a victim mentality is the totally opposite thing you want to do too. That's bad.
Sure.
Victim mentality is one thing that bothers me more than anything in the world. You control your space. We talk about that right around your body here. You control that. You control what you want to think and what you want to do. And so to sit there and feel sorry for them, I think is wrong too.
Sure.
I think you make it aware, but I think they need to understand it, because the ones that do it right are the ones, successful ones, the happy ones. The ones who don't are going to be the ones who are continue to complain and have anxiety and be bothered and worried and never reach their dreams and never be happy.
The best example of that I've seen from one of your teams on the course would be Big Tens at Crooked Stick in 21, or was it 22? Yeah. 21. I think people don't maybe realize this about golf tournaments, because you're thinking about it's just individuals out on the course. So Iowa led by 8 shots, back 9, final round. Mm-hmm. Geo eagled 11. And 11 is kind of sitting up on this hill, and he gives this signal to, I think it was Tommy Kuhlbeck in the fairway or whatever. I can't remember exactly how it, and it just sparked this thing, this team thing of like, now's the moment. And everything switched from there. And then you could sense Iowa, as you know, they're asking their assistant coach, okay, the lead is 4 now, and so and so just eagled back here, and this and that. And it just played out, and I'm trying to like capture it in what I'm covering at the time of like, oh wait, these guys are ready for this moment, and I'm not sure Iowa is. No disrespect to them, they had some really good players that year, but it just, anybody at that tournament, you could watch it turn of like, wait, these guys just found this gear, and they are locked in with each other, and they're so businesslike about this. I remember Fiegels had this iron on 16. It's a 2-tiered green, and you had to hit into the tier to roll it and to keep it on the upper tier, and had to hit into that slope. And he did it, and then he's like sent a signal to so-and-so on the 17th tee. And it was just so clinical of like, oh, wait, these guys are in assassin mode right now. And that doesn't just happen. That comes from building it throughout the year. So talk about that if you can.
Well, I talked about it today with my players today. That doesn't come just from this year. It comes from previous years. It comes from a standard you build. Mm-hmm. Now, we were the best team that year over year. We were better than Iowa.
Sure.
A lot higher ranked and everything. But again, in golf, I mean, it's what we've done in the Big Ten is really unique because one week decides the Big Ten champion. It's hard to bring it on a particular week. Mm-hmm. The way I believe you do that is you get your standard every day and get your standard good enough to where your average is just good enough to win.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we played bad those first couple of days, but our average was good enough to keep us in the game. Mm-hmm. Until something good happened.
Yep.
And that was a key because we could have been blown out more than that. We weren't sure. Playing well. And the pressure these guys felt, all those, we had like 7 or 8 in a row at the time, or 6, or whatever it was.
Right.
And, you know, they're carrying a lot of baggage with them. And they're still kids. They're not on the PGA Tour. People forget that. So the way they fought through that, but you said, and I you need to play this for my guys because they need to hear this from somebody else but me. But the look, the presence our guys had was not a cocky arrogance. It wasn't a scared or feeling sad for themselves. It was just a businesslike. This is what we do. Let's do it, and let's see how this thing ends up. Mm-hmm. And the last hole, I think we had 4 of the 5 guys miss the fairway. Four of the last five missed the green.
Yes.
And we flipped Iowa. We got them all up and down, made all pars, and they made a couple bogeys.
Yep.
On the last hole by playing poor golf but controlling our space.
Yep.
And – I'm glad you remember that because not everybody's that observant, Robert. You got it. But to do that, that's why we won. And we've won a lot of Big Ten championships that way because when you come in the favorite, it's easier to play golf as an underdog than as a favorite.
Yes.
It really is. There's so many variables. There's so many bad bouncers. There's so much adversity. You're getting dinged every minute. And if you just let the momentum drop or change and you get a little worried, it just spirals out of control. So that's the key to having good golf teams is everybody buys into the spirit, the accountability, the responsibility to hit that standard and trust what's going to happen.
Yeah. Before covering tournaments, I always thought, okay, well, it's just kind of this is a numbers thing. And even if you've had bad rounds, maybe that comeback in the final round, it's just the good team is going to finish with these scores. And it just happened that most of their birdies came in the final round and this and that. And then when you get out there and you can feel it, it really is a team sport. It's the craziest thing of like, wait, this isn't just individual numbers at all. This is a team sport, and they are connected in a way that is hard to understand unless you're inside of it.
It's funny we're talking about this today because that's what we're working on our team about. Because we're youthful, we're very young, we're not as tight as we need to be. We will be, hopefully, when guys understand this and it hits home. We're very talented. But this is why we've been good for a long time, and this is why a team from the Midwest who doesn't play all winter, that may not have the top-tiered recruits in the country coming out of high school, come in and have success. And then by the time they graduate, what you're talking about here, if you learn that as a person, learn that with a team, it makes you a better player.
Mm-hmm.
And you become better, and then your game is ready for the next level through playing golf as a team. Where most college golf teams, they go out and they just go play golf, and if they happen to win, hey, we won. If they lose, well, we didn't make enough putts. We didn't hit enough drive, fairways, whatever. And they just slough it off and then off the next one. They don't really understand that you can control what goes on if you really want to share something together and that energy together and that accountability together. You can actually play above your pay grade when you understand how the whole thing works.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you don't always get the top tier recruits. Fans in basketball right now are really drawn to Keaton Wagler. Mm-hmm. He was under recruited. Are you able to see, Brad Underwood ultimately saw something in him and goes, yeah, he belongs at Illinois.
Right.
Are you able to see that and go, okay, this kid for whatever reason isn't a quote top tier recruit, but I know he belongs at Illinois and he can be really good?
We get good players. We get some high recruits, but
yes.
We don't get the ranked recruits. But I will tell you, every recruit we have on our team, every player we have for the last 20 years has the potential to be really, really good. There's nobody really in there that has no chance.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to be good at the game of golf, you have to be able to hit it good. You got to be able to think good. and you got to have the emotional stability to be a champion. That stuff needs to grow too. So I think if you can, in our sport, if you can recruit potential, the better they are, the better you are, the better they can be. We all know that. But there's more to it than just hitting the golf ball. And kids on my team and other teams still believe that their secret to success is just hitting the golf ball. Just, I got to swing better, swing better, swing better. When if you thought better and you handled all this, your emotions and the situations and your mindset, and you chose the correct shot, and you did the little things like lag putt better, or you know, have you know, bump and run shots around the green versus always a 60-degree flop shot. If you learn the little things, it all comes together. And that's how guys can get better. So it's never a pipe dream for guys in our program. It's just that they haven't hit it yet. They haven't learned it yet. And a lot of kids, I could tell the guys on my team, there's 50 other schools in the country have just as much a better talent than us. We have just as much as them. But what decides where you go is not just talent. It's how you mix all this stuff together in the pot and stir it up and who comes out owning it all.
Yeah, and forgive me if I was suggesting you don't get good players.
No, you're fine.
But to borrow the Keaton Wagler, he was under-recruited, but...
I guess that's the word. Yeah, that's good.
But he was identified as the makeup was there. Mm-hmm. And that's a very mature freshman. But I guess that's my question. Is there sort of makeup that you can sense, that maturity that you need or that you can get them to versus just, hey, they can hit it far?
It's hard. It's hard. You go with your gut, and I think Brad will be the first one to tell you too. We hit on some, we miss on some. It's just, I want to get people around here that I think can be good, that can win a Big Ten championship themselves. Do I see them potentially having the ability to do that? But also, you know, you want to get people that want to, and again, you miss on things. You might not see it all, but you want to coexist with people. It's spend a lot of time with these kids. You know, it's supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be a grind. It's supposed to be a fun grind, I guess, if you will. But you just don't ever know. But you have faith in what your decision is, and you create the environment where they can grow. But like I said, it just seems like nowadays some kids, for the fear of failure, or for whatever reason, they hold themselves back. They try too hard. They look elsewhere for the answers. The best place to look for an answer is within. I mean, if kids want something to change, or people want something to change in their life, what's the first thing you got to do? Change yourself. Everybody looks elsewhere for things to change. They look for a different school. They look for a different culture. They look for a different weather. They look for. We talk about our team. If you want things to change, if you want your game to change, you have to change first. And I want kids that can do that. And sometimes you get it right. Sometimes you don't.
I have a theory on that. Some of the reason that exists is because our lives are being lived publicly on social media.
Yeah.
And what happens when you put yourself out there? You get criticized, fairly or unfairly. Everybody loves to tear down whoever, the celebrity, the athlete, the person in charge. Some of that is totally legit. Some of it isn't. Some of it's fake. But I think it's almost like if I take a risk, what's going to happen is I'm going to catch fire. So... maybe that's why that anxiety list lives out there in some of the youth, or maybe in myself at sometimes, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it may seem like this discussion is getting deep, but this is what coaching is.
Yep.
I mean, coaching golf is just not teaching them how to fade a 5-iron to a back right pin or knock down a wedge from 130. That's the easy stuff, really. It's getting them to understand that they can do it, that they have to trust themselves to do it, and that, you know, they're not be afraid. I mean, it's just like, you know, you got to trust yourself, and so much of it is your self-image. I go back to that all the time. It's unbelievable.
My main thought there when you're talking about Keaton Wagler is if you listen to Coach Underwood talk about him, the main point he constantly makes is nothing bothers this kid. I can load all of this stuff on him and it doesn't bother him. Nothing overwhelms him. Nothing bothers him. And it's so much like what you have talked about some of the great golfers coming through here of like, I can put it all on him. It's not going to faze him. He's not going to get frustrated. He's going to take it and he's going to apply it.
That's the sign of a champion. They're comfortable in their own skin.
Mm-hmm.
If he has success, he's going to be happy, but he's not going to think he's greater than he is. And if he fails, he's not going to think he's worse than he is. It's just next up.
Yep.
Our battle cry on our team that we learned a long time from a good friend of mine, sports psychologist we use, is the word next. If you just went through life and everything you did, just next, next, and not dwell on what you learn from it for 5 seconds, learn from it, and then move on, but next. And that's what a Keaton Wagler looks like. He's not worried about anything. He's, for a freshman to sustain that success, now again, physically, he looks outmatched at times, strength-wise, but sure. skill-wise and mental toughness, mm-hmm. he's as good as it gets. He's holding in there pretty good.
Yep.
And I've had guys like that, too, that just go about their business. When you jump them on them, they're not crushed. They're not defeated. They actually look at it. They have enough self-confidence to take it as constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. And then when you give them a high five, a pat on the back, or a hug, they appreciate it. They feel that warmth, but they also realize that's not the end of it either. I've had guys that have had won tournaments and gone on and had success. I mean, won a tournament, and then they struggle for 6 months because they think they got to change and their expectation level changes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. It's just next. Just go about it and let your talents come through by staying in the moment.
In an earlier episode at the end of the year, we decided on our top five moments of the calendar year of 2025. And I advocated across Illinois athletics. And I advocated for the regional that was hosted in Urbana at the Atkins Golf Club. Because, all due respect, advancing out of a regional is great success and should be celebrated. For you guys, that's a standard. But I thought on top of that was the chance for the community to be out. I thought the community shined. I thought Illinois athletics shined at that event. Mm-hmm. And the golf course itself shined. And so I thought that was one of the best moments in the year. And will there be a chance for golf for people here to see in the near future again?
For NCAA Regional, it's going to be a few years.
Sure.
Because those don't come around a lot. But we've already committed in spring of 27. We're hosting at Atkins again.
Yeah.
I got the field almost set. Again, that's a year, 15 months away. But we're going to be out there. April 24 and 25. Of 2027, we're going to have 8 or 9 Big Ten teams and a few mid-majors from the MAC and the Big East, and we're going to play at Atkins again. We didn't want to do it this year because that regional is such a big endeavor for people in the department and
sure.
for Atkins to take over. We decided not to do it this year, just lay out, because regionals were just last spring.
Sure.
Next year, we're going to do it again. So, yes, hopefully the weather will be good in April. This year, it was great in May, but April is always iffy.
Well, I know sometimes you kind of like to be under the radar in terms of as a program. You kind of put your head down and do your thing. But the opportunity to have access for fans was great.
I thought it was great.
My hat's off to you for that whole thing.
Well, the department did a great job. Mm-hmm. Jim Buzzy and the people at Atkins, Nate, the superintendent, that place is pure. That's fun. There's not a better deal for the amount of money it costs you to play Atkins, to play those greens and that golf course yep. all year round. You go to Chicago, that's going to be twice as much, maybe more, to play that golf course. So I'm proud of them. Our department does a great job. It's stressful to host.
Yeah.
But, hey, it is what it is. It's great.
This year's schedule, you've got a lot on the West Coast. That just happened, or is it because we're going to Pumpkin Ridge for Big Tens and it's going to be out there and you wanted to be in those conditions? Tell me about the spring schedule.
Pumpkin Ridge, by the way, is in Oregon.
Sorry. Talk a little golf
yep,
thing
in
here.
Portland.
Everybody knows it's Pumpkin Portland. Ridge.
It's Portland. It's a great golf course. Of the Oregon in the conference now, the conference decided to go out there and play.
Yep.
The event we're playing a month earlier in Eugene
yep.
was by design because we wanted to get out there and climb it.
Yep.
There's an NCAA regional at Oregon State, so there's a 1 in 6 chance we could get shipped out there.
Sure.
I have two guys on my top five on my team who are really good players that are from the state of Washington.
Yep.
It's always good to get guys back home if I can.
Mm-hmm.
And the NCAA finals are in Southern California.
Yeah,
we always go to Vegas for Southern Highlands. That's one of the staples in college golf. So, yeah, it ended up being out there probably more than we normally are, but that was the reason.
Sure.
But next year, not this spring, but next spring, the Big Ten is in New Jersey at Baltusrol,
yep.
which is hosted majors.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't go out west as much, but that was the idea.
Yeah.
But, again, I got it just made sense. We're on the West Coast. Scheduling college golf is difficult, and it's been more difficult last – 2 years, 3 years, because we're scheduling events a year and a half in advance.
Yeah.
And people, you want to try to fit the golf course, the climate, the grasses, and the field. Fields ebb and flow. You sign up for one thing, think it's the field, then it's somebody else. So you can outthink yourself at times, but it made sense this year to spend more time out west because of where that Big Tens and Nationals are.
Yeah, it's funny how, it's so much of the discussion, you'll see Mick Cronin talking about how UCLA has to travel to Rutgers on a Tuesday night, and like football has these discussions of, well, USC has to play in Champaign at 11 a.m. That's 9 a.m. for them. It also exists in golf that Big Tens now are Baltimore last year, Portland, Oregon this year, and then you're saying Baltusrol's next year?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same. Like, it's a national conference now for golf.
It is, and I respect Mick Cronin. I think he's a great coach, but I just let him know that, yeah, the more you complain about that, the more your players hear you. And it becomes another. See? It becomes a vice where, you know, it's just negative energy. It's like, just deal with it. It is what it is, man. We don't control it.
Yes.
I know people want to get an edge and you want to do this and that, and I get all that.
Yeah.
But it is what it is, man. Just do it. Suck it up and do it. Make the best of it.
Yeah.
All the best to you in the upcoming season. Start next week in Alabama, and you outlined a good portion of the rest of the schedule. And like you said, I guess you don't know until you go play, because that's why you got to, you know, say we're counting this now, right? This is not practice anymore.
These count. And we had a couple of practice trips where, you know, as a coach, you like every day to be really serious. And it's hard when you're going to country clubs and the members are playing out around you, and we're trying to practice our sport in tournament conditions with the general public or members in front and behind you. So it's difficult. It was productive these last 2 weeks. Would I've liked it to replicate a tournament more? Yes. But it is what it is. So we're going to go next week, and we're going to find out what we got. And if we play well, we should do okay. If we play bad, we'll have to see if we'll figure this thing out. We'll go back to the drawing board, and we'll get better. But as a coach, I can't go out today and play golf here and see what I'm doing. So we're going to go down there and compete. But tournaments are different than playing. Tournaments are different than just hit and giggle, you know. Yeah. So we're going to see how they handle it.
Have you set your five yet, or the competition's still going on?
Yeah, I'm pretty well set in my mind. I haven't made it known yet, but I'm going to let it, you know, linger for a couple more days. But, yeah, I think so. I think we got a pretty deep team. I got
you
a lot of
potential. You just tell them to listen to this, and you can tell them through this.
He loves it. Let it linger. I mean, it's part of coaching, right?
Yeah. Like,
they need that competitive juice right up to the end to know who's going to be in the lineup.
Mike Small, thank you so much for joining us. All the best, and perhaps if we can find a window to do it again before or after the season's out, love to do it.
Just call me.
All right. I'll see you in Portland.
All right, guys. You're heading to Portland, are you?
Of course.
Oh, I love it.
I had so much fun at Big Tens last year. I'm going to do it again.
Yeah, well, this is a big one. We finished second last 2 years. And,
yep.
You know, we had, 13 wins and 3 seconds last 16 years. And this team has not going to – they don't want to go 3 years in a row that winning one. But it's going to be tough. But we're going to see how we do, and we got 3 months to get ready.
All right.
That's a National Coach of the Year and a 13-time Big Ten champion coach, Mike Small, here with us on Light the Eye. Well, that was an enjoyable conversation.
Absolutely.
Like I said, I could offer Mike Small some – just come with me to maybe just stay here and podcast and just talk me through it. Or talk me through broadcasting or whatever else is going on.
Absolutely. I've said before that, like, the reason, you know, I think it was Golf Digest, there was a poll of college golf courses or college golf coaches, who's the top college golf coach, and he was named by all of his peers as the number one coach. And I believe it's because they all have these conversations with him and leave like, man, I want that guy coaching me. Like, you know, it's just that feeling he leaves with everybody else, that there's confident in what he knows and how he knows how to do it and everything else. And it's quite an inspiring thing. And you see why he's had so many Big Ten championships.
Yep. And I liked what he's the national championship has eluded him, but he, I don't know that it's keeping him up at night.
Yep.
I mean, who wouldn't want that?
Yes. I think part of it is he really has done it twice in the way that all of, you know, people see, like, the true national champion was the stroke play team. The Golf Channel champion was the team that won match play, because it was just for the broadcast that they brought this along to get it out there and everything else. So you go to the national championships and it is a big deal on Monday night when they, you know, come off the course and what team had the lowest score. They still recognize it. There are plaques at the golf center at the demergent facility over there that say, you know, stroke play national champion and everything else. You can't claim the national championship because that's match play. But again, there is still some cynicism toward it of like, okay, yes, this gets college golf out there, but really the best team this year was proven to be that team.
All right. Before we go, we said we were going to play a little game. And this is really not to shortchange any of our audio listeners only. Mm-hmm. But for our viewers, you may have noticed something. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to – should we pull back the curtain here? We'll pull back the curtain?
Yes. Pull back the curtain.
We obviously didn't record Mike Small today.
Yes.
We recorded with him earlier in the week.
Uh-huh. Even though I pulled this shirt on. I think there are – I was counting five different things that I know are different.
Well, that's where I was going to leave it for the comments.
Okay. Okay.
What differences did you notice that would reveal
this? This is like Highlights Magazine, right? Yes. You're sitting in the doctor's office. You're at the dentist. You are 12 years old. Your mom is reading a magazine. You're sitting there. They have a highlights. You turn to the page of what's the difference between these two pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the game you are to play now, because from the segment before to the segment now, there are at least five things different since we're recording this part on a different day.
See if you can spot them.
Yes.
And if you can, leave them in the comments. And if you do a good job, Robert will give you a sticker.
And then if you flip the page, you can look at Goofus and Gallant. Do you remember Goofus and Gallant?
Vaguely.
Yes. It was always the... Goofus holds the door open for people. Goofus barges his way through. Gallant opens the door and holds the door and goes in the building last. It was a way.
Which one would be you and which one would be me in this, if there was an analogy?
Goofus, Gallant.
Self-aware.
I do hold doors. I'm a door holding man.
You're not rude.
Yes.
But
Goofus. Goofus shows up late.
We have been.
Gallant shows up on time.
We've been likened to Bert and Ernie also.
Okay. Wait, which one? Oh, I'm Bert. No, I'm Ernie. I like being Ernie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One more reminder that Illinois baseball starts on Friday against the South Florida Bulls on February 13th.
Mm-hmm. You get to go fly into the warmth and broadcast baseball.
Yes, but... the weather here won't be so bad in Champaign-Urbana. It looks like it'll be 40s and 50s.
I'm excited for you in a opening day sense, right?
Yeah.
Like this is a big deal. I'm trying to think. So this would be like first tailgate, right? For me. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think of what this feeling is. Night before first tailgate, I'm like, oh man.
Don't screw this up.
No. Yes. Don't say the wrong things in front of everybody. But yeah, this is good for you. I'm excited for you.
The one thing about a blank scorebook is like, oh, the story has yet to be written.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no pitches thrown, there's no outs recorded, mm-hmm. there's no home runs hit.
Mm-hmm.
That story has yet to be written by the guys,
mm-hmm.
and I'm looking forward to seeing what's in the story. I hope they remember to, in the off season, work out and practice and all those things.
Yes.
Because that's kind of the prequel to the story.
Yes. They were throwing the shirts at the basketball game last night.
Yes.
Into the crowd, and I'm checking out everybody's arm. I'm like, nobody better short arm these, because then you can't really be on a baseball team here, son.
And don't throw your arm out throwing a t-shirt.
Yes. Please don't do that.
I don't think anybody was harmed doing that.
Yes.
No, but they're excited. I'm excited.
Good.
I know that we got a basketball thing going on, and we're in the thick of it, and that's where your fan attention is going to be, and that's totally cool. I just want to remind you, we got some baseball. It's on the radio. It's on the internet. You can catch it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what this team is.
Excellent. We'll have fun down there, and we'll talk to you and talk to everyone soon.
All right. Thanks so much to our guest, Mike Small, on this episode, and thanks for the production help from Ella Peterson, our producer, and Sean Mills with the Center for Innovation, Teaching, and Learning. Thanks to our title sponsor as well, the U of I Credit Union. For Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. We'll talk again soon, next time when we light the eye.